Hello and a warm welcome to the best of the Positive Leadership Podcast Season 2 with me, Jean-Philippe Courtois, JP. What makes a great leader? Clear vision? Courage to make tough decisions? Yes, but it's also about listening, deep empathy, and prioritizing well-being. In this series, I've been speaking to some of the world's top entrepreneurs and thought leaders to find out what it takes to be a positive leader and how you can become one to yourselves.
There's questions, but there's these principles about be lazy, be curious, be often. Which of those, if you had to pick one, which felt most revolutionary or most important to you as you shifted your leadership style?
Clearly, be lazy. Be lazy. Michael Bungestanier is one of the world's leading coaches. He's the author of The Coaching Habit, the best-selling book on coaching this century. And I've been lucky enough to have been coached by him personally. Two things he said to me really stand out. Be curious and be lazy. Stop working so hard, jumping in and fixing things for others. And that was something I really struggled with. Here's Michael and I discussing that in episode 3.
For so much of the time, right, growing from my first line management position, like many years back, 36 years back, probably, yeah, all the way to now, Michael, I've been really always rushing to help people. I mean, with some good intent, by the way, to try to immediately jump into a solution, into a recommendation, into an option. And that encouragement to me, I mean, I realized as well, to be honest, I was growing up a little bit with my more maturity, more gray hair as well, and more, a bit of more wisdom, maybe, hopefully, that the more I could offer a platform for everyone I was working with to basically build their own growth, build their own solution, build their own path for achieving more, that was so much powerful in many ways. And so that has been the most profound, I would say, takeaway.
It's provocative. I mean, I wrote it deliberately to be provocative because most of the people that I end up working with, and you're a perfect example, they wouldn't naturally describe themselves as lazy people. They're typically driven, ambitious, hardworking people who they enjoy their work. And they're like, I love this. I love the busyness. I love the commitment to it. I've got big dreams for myself and for the world and for my business. And being lazy feels quite counterintuitive. But it's not just that, because when I say, but you know, slow down jumping in and fixing other people's problems for them, create space for them, most people intellectually get that. There's a deeper resistance, JP, which is, well, how am I adding value? Am I still being helpful if I'm not being helpful and giving people the ideas and the solutions and the opinions? And if I'm handing over control of this conversation or this project or this moment to the other person, who am I? So it takes a degree of self-work on your sense of self and confidence.
Yes.
To say, look, my job is to, you know, particularly in the corporate setting, to enable greatness around me. And that means actually decentering myself. And that's an odd experience if, like we mostly do in our careers, we spend a lot of time trying to center ourselves, pay attention to me, promote me, let me lead this team, let me take on this challenge, to then go, but how do I now get out of the way so other people can step into what's required, requires a certain degree of courage.
That's Michael Bungestanier. The idea of decentering ourselves, not being at the center of the world, but being there to serve the others so that they can achieve more, is a powerful lesson and something that I've tried to incorporate into my management role at Microsoft and outside of Microsoft too. One of the most amazing things I learned is how useful positive emotions are. They change the way human brain takes in information and widen our perspective. So why don't we prioritize them more?
I think, especially in Western culture, we put achievement up on a pedestal and we make a to-do list for our day, but we don't make a to feel list. we don't think of necessarily automatically organizing our day, not just about what we can accomplish, but what we can feel.
Well, Dr. Barbara Fredrickson, who is the Kenyan Distinguished Professor of Psychology
at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. She is a scientist who specializes in the study of emotions. Barbara's research shows that having more micro moments of connectedness with people, even people you barely know, has a real big impact on your day-to-day well-being. Taking time to connect with people while not in our inner circle has enormous value. It just opens us up and makes us kinder and humbler.
Even just acknowledge someone's presence by smiling and nodding as you pass each other, or connecting with a service person or cashier or something, you know, and in contexts that are safe to do that, it makes people more spiritual, that the kind of spiritual that is feeling like we're all in this together and there's a kind of a universal human connection that actually grows out of connect with strangers. Yeah. Because, you know, if people are going to have a positive view of humanity, nobody has a relationship with humanity. They have relationships with strangers and people they barely know. And that's a stand-in for their views of humanity. So when those go well, we think people are basically good and are worth protecting and cherishing. So that's sort of where our ethics come from, is from our day-to-day connections.
The incredible Barbara Fredrickson there. It's one thing to want to do good in the world, but how do you activate a positive mindset in ourselves and in others so that you can have a real impact? Akhtar Bacha is an old friend and colleague of mine. In the early 2000s, before anyone was actually talking about digital economy, he was helping digital entrepreneurs to bring tech to underserved communities in India, Africa, and Latin America. Today, Akhtar is teaching social innovation at the University of Washington. In episode 2 of the series, he told me your leading with purpose is not just about writing a check. It is more than about giving away money. Purpose needs to be the soul of the company. It needs to be the why.
It's the why for you as an individual and why for the company. Purpose is not about philanthropy. Purpose is about how have you created the company and what is the reason for the company. And then how does everybody that is employed in the company show up? How are you showing up? What is driving you?
So how would you help someone else achieve a purpose mindset? What would you do?
Discover your strengths and work from your strengths.
Start with your strengths, always.
The second is have a lens of abundance. We always work through the frame of scarcity. I don't have this. Start somewhere and it will snowball.
Yep.
You will collect people with you. Third, it is not about doing things the right way. It is about doing the right thing. It is not about efficiency. It is about effectiveness.
It's very wise. Yes.
And that's the third principle. The fourth is you should be creating movements, not organizations. Microsoft, I've never seen Microsoft as a company. I have seen Microsoft as a movement. The company is the vessel that propels that movement.
Absolutely.
But if you think of movements, then the skill set you need is not about managing. The skill sets you need is about synchronization. And that's a very different skill sets to have in an executive leadership team. You're no longer managing people. You're actually synchronizing their desires and pushing that so that it becomes a movement. And movement brings people along with you.
Yes, it's powerful.
And then the fifth principle is all about moving on that path from generosity to empathy to compassion, where the shift the focus from the me
to we
to the collective we.
Yeah.
So when a group is asking a question, how do I generate more revenue? The question should be, how do I service the customer, the community in a much better way? And if you take that as an approach, then revenues just follow.
Five really useful principles there.
from ACTA, which we could all do with keeping in mind. Ian Huffington is a Greek American author and a very famous businesswoman too. She's a CEO and founder of Thrive Global, an organization which provides behavior change technology to businesses. But she's best known as the co-founder of the Huffington Post, the very successful news aggregator and blog. In 2007, 2 years into building the Huffington Post, she had a wake-up call. A divorced mom of two teenage daughters, she had bought into the collective delusion that in order to succeed, you have to be always on, power through exertion.
Burnout is supposed to be the price we pay for success.
So here's Rihanna.
And in the process, I really considered sleep, taking care of myself as a luxury I could not afford.
Yeah, yeah.
If I wanted to be super founder and super mom. Anyway, I collapsed, hit my head on my desk, broke my cheekbone.
Let's just pause there for a minute. She was so tight, she hit her head on her desk and broke her cheekbone. That's incredible. And it was a trigger for Rihanna to completely change her life.
And that, in retrospect, was an amazing wake-up call that helped me delve deeply into the world of burnout.
Each one of us sometimes has something unique happening in his life, her life, a trigger that makes you realize that, hey, life is very precious and that you need to apply some different meanings in the way you spend your time and the quality of the time you want to spend, which means also balancing the time you're gonna sleep. And you know, in your book, in your reference, the 2011 number, which I'm sure is much bigger now, where the Harvard Medical School study said that the lost performance of the US workforce due to insomnia costed businesses something like $63 billion a decade ago. So I think there's probably a much bigger number of tax to be paid now, right?
Yes. And also now we've seen the connection between sleep deprivation and Alzheimer's and cognitive decline in general. I think it's very important to make sure that our well-being conversation is very rigorous and science and data driven. Because sometimes when you talk about well-being, people may think, oh, this is sort of warm and fuzzy. No, it's not.
No, I fully agree with you, Ariana. I think employers, companies, I think are realizing big time about the correlation. No, I like, you know, this podcast is also about sharing the best practices, what we do. And so can you share with our listeners your own relationship with sleep and your personal tips for being rested and having your right sleep quota? I would call that my quota of sleep. How do you do that, Ariana?
So my favorite sleep micro step.
Yes, what is it?
Is turning off my phone. I like to have a little transition to sleep. You know, you have two children, so you probably remember when they were little, you would have a whole ritual of singing them a lullaby, giving them a bath, reading them Good Night Moon. I actually created a parody of Good Night Moon called Good Night Smartphone. So we can separate ourselves from our day and be able to surrender to sleep and recharge. How you end your day and how you start your day is very critical. And again, beginning small, we call them micro steps too small to fail.
Yeah.
Take 60 seconds in the morning to be able to remember what you're grateful for. Set your intention for the day. Take some conscious breaths before you go to your phone. 72% of people go to their phone before they're fully awake.
Right away, yeah.
You know, before their feet have hit the ground. And so they're at the mercy of whatever is waiting for them before they are really ready to face the day and whatever challenges it brings.
To be a positive leader who can inspire and build teams and create and innovate, we need to operate from a place of fullness and to take that time to recharge. In whatever stage we are at in our career or in our lives, we need to prioritize well-being. Because if we don't, it is hard to bring our best selves to everything we do. Jiro Billimoria has been a serial social entrepreneur for more than 20 years. Born in India, she's the founder of several NGOs with a core focus on empowering youth, including most recently the One Family Foundation, I wanted to get advice on the best ways to build that impact, how to approach the question of scaling in particular.
So there are two ways to scaling. One way to scaling is the traditional model, like Save the Children, Oxfam, where you have a big model and you build a multi-billion dollar model, and then Europe collects all the money and then it distributes it to the South.
Yes.
Correct? That's the traditional model which is there. The model which I really use and I think works very well, is at least it works for me, is where instead of saying you need to be big to get at the table, I'm saying you need to build collective power. Bring about the change through collective power, community power, and through sharing of resources. So if you see, the whole premise is not I have an idea and I'm going to tell you what to do. The premise is there may be this concept. Do you think you need it? Let's first research, let's find out, and let's co-create.
Now, I'd like to shift gears a bit, Jiro, and talk about, in a way, your own personal skills, clients, etc. You know, because clearly it takes someone special to do all of that at a mega scale. So can you share what are your unique strengths and talents that you believe really serve you really well to become a social entrepreneur? And in a way, kind of elaborate on that, on some kind of advice as well for other change makers, emerging change makers, on the way they should think about their strengths, talents to bring the best in the world.
Can I look at it from another point, JP?
Please do. Please do.
If you don't mind.
Yes.
My parents and my mother always said, don't necessarily build things based on your strength.
Uh-huh.
Because that also comes from a point of arrogance. And the one thing I don't want is for you ever to have that, is actually build from your weaknesses.
Interesting.
I'm a terrible fundraiser.
Yes.
So I never wanted to build an organization. And I don't really like asking for money and it's not, you know, even if it's for a cause or an issue. You know, so how can you create structures where that is at the minimal? Another thing is I am chronically dyslexic. So you'll see 10 spelling mistakes in any email I send you also, JP. You'll see that. Man. I know that. Then I have other people who are much better taking that and leading that and making all of that happen, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not because I'm uncomfortable with my weaknesses. I'm talking about them. But when you build from knowing what you're not good at, you build much stronger.
If you'd like to hear more from Inspiring Worlds from Jiro Bilimoria or any of the other guests featured in today's programs, you can listen to the full episode on our homepage. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, please. We'll be back soon with season 3 in March. I'd like to leave you with a final word from my friend Akhtar Bacha. Purpose is within us. It is just like a switch. If you turn it on, it illuminates darkness. It is like a smile, literally. Yes, you smile, you light up a room. Purpose is that switch. It's there. Just turn it on. I'm Jean-Philippe Courtois, JP. You've been listening to the Positive Leadership Podcast. Thank you so much, and goodbye.